We here at Time Well Electronic Recording Productions would like to take a moment to extend our deepest sympathies to the victims in Aurora, Colorado of this huge tragedy. From one Aurora to another, our hearts and prayers go out to the victims of this tragedy. We would like to take a moment to acknowledge their passing and the pain that the families are going through. Please know that we do not take the situation lightly in any way, shape, or form, but we also believe that one of the best ways to cope with tragedy is through humor. The jokes and fun that you are about to hear are in no way, shape, or form intended to be dishonoring to those who have suffered this tragedy. We ask that after this moment of silence, you enjoy our broadcast. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to Twerpcast, episode 63, Batcast. This time we'll be discussing all things Anne Hathaway's skin-tight cats. Wowza, wowza, wowza. Oh, and we may discuss other Batman-related incidentals like Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale. I'd like to introduce you to Eartha Kitt skin suit number one fan, Jim Caswell, Twerpcast executive producer.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of Time Well Electronic Recording Productions, and I got nothing.
And I'm Ken Halloran, the Piddler. This actually is a reference to this weird incident with the condensation on a soda at the movie theater, but...
Holy cinema, Jim!
Holy cinema, Jim?
Cinema. It's a bad cast. I threw in a holy whatever reference.
Probably the first of many.
Maybe.
Much like the character that we featured last week, Batman has been DC's most prolific character in media. Through the years, he has had multiple comic books, movie serials, TV shows, films, video games.
Toys.
If you can think of it, there's probably been a bat symbol on it.
Holy bat condom, Batman.
That's two. Created by Bill Finger and Bob Kane, Batman's first appearance was in May of 1939 in Detective Comics number 27.
I love the fact that you put Bill Finger ahead of Bob Kane, just because of the whole legal thing that every Batman story always says, Batman, created by Bob Kane, and most people know, if they're comic book geeks like me, that Bill Finger did most of the heavy lifting. Giving Finger credit ahead of him, that's a ballsy move.
Well, what can I say? I'm a writer. I have to look out for my homies.
But Detective Comics number 27 was not Batman's only appearance in comic books, was it, Jim?
No, it wasn't. The character has been featured in well over a dozen titles. Starting with Detective Comics, he soon also got his own spin-off book, Batman. He's been one of the main features in World's Finest, The Brave and the Bold, Batman Family, Batman and the Outsiders, Legends of the Dark Knight, Batman Shadow of the Bat, The Batman Adventures, The Batman Chronicles, Batman Gotham Adventures, Batman Gotham Knights, Superman Batman, The Batman Strikes, Batman Confidential, Batman Street of Gotham, Batman and Robin, Batman Incorporated.
This list doesn't even include the hundreds of miniseries and spinoffs that he's been in. But one of my favorite sight gags in comics, and I forget which title it's in, perhaps Ken will remember, was a panel that showed like a Subway-type store, but it was called World's Finest Heroes.
Probably Superman Batman. World's Finest, when it first began, basically you had a Superman lead story and a Batman story in the back, or vice versa, with like a Zatara or Green Arrow story in the middle or something. And then when they cut back the page count, they were figuring out, okay, which feature do we cut, Superman or Batman? And then somebody had the bright idea, hey, let's put them together. So you start getting these Superman and Batman stories. Then, I forget if it was the late 90s or early 2000s, they actually decided, we'll bring back the Superman Batman book and just call it Superman Batman. But I could very easily then saying, okay, in reference to it being Superman Batman, we'll make a reference to them being the world's finest hero somewhere.
I think that is actually where it was.
Deductive reasoning. That's the name of the game.
But as we stated, Batman hasn't just stayed in the comic books. He's been featured in other mediums as well. One of the most extensive appearances has been on television. We all hold the 1960s Batman TV show in high regard, starring Adam West and Burt Ward.
Adam West.
Okay, besides the 1966 Batman series, there was the two episodes of Legends of the Superheroes, which also starred Adam West and Burt Ward, and, well, I'm not going to go any further. The less you say about that series, the better.
I can honestly say it's the only television show that has ever made me physically violently ill. Now, I may have had the flu, but it was that show that caused me to lose my lunch.
Holy vomit, Batman.
I don't know. I have fond memories of it. Usually laughing like crazy at it, but those are fond memories.
I have fond memories of Danuta in the Black Canary costume. There was the Batman Superman Hour, which was the animated follow-up to the Superman Aquaman Hour, which was the animated follow-up to the New Adventures of Superman. There were his infamous guest appearances on the new Scooby-Doo movies. He was, of course, on the Super Friends Forever and all of their myriad permutations. Then there was the New Adventures of Batman, which was Filmation using a lot of the same animation cells from Batman Superman Hour, but actually got Adam West and Burt Ward back to do the voices.
Isn't that the one where they introduced Batmite?
To animation, yeah. He'd been in the comic book since the early 60s, and pretty much gone since the late 60s. But yeah, they brought Batmite in there. Then, after the success of the 1989 Batman film, there was Batman the Animated Series, the Dark Deco. They used a very noticeable Art Deco aesthetic for their Gotham City, but they colored on black mats instead of white for the backgrounds.
Dark Deco. Wasn't he the porn star in a porn parody of Batman?
I'll be honest. I was more interested in who was playing Catwoman and Batgirl.
Okay. Things that you learn that you have no way of ever forgetting again, no matter how much you scrape and scrub at your brain.
What, that I've actually seen bat porn? Or the fact that it actually exists?
A little out of column A and a little out of column B?
I mean, for all of the problems with the porn industry, actually a lot of the parody films that they do are, in their own peculiar way, pretty respectful. The costumes in the Bat parody I saw were remarkably faithful to the 1966 TV show, and it was clear they spent a fair amount of budget on it.
Oh, wait a second. I do vaguely remember. This was like a few years ago that this came out, right?
Probably.
And I remember hearing that one of the things that they had featured was that you could actually watch a segment of the video where they took all the sex scenes out and it was just the storyline.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Which I was like, really? That's an interesting concept.
And it was frighteningly faithful to the old TV series. Of course, there wasn't as much sex on the TV series.
Did Batgirl and Catwoman go down the Batpole?
I don't remember that particular combination. I do remember there was a holy three-way Batman with Batman, Robin, and Catwoman. And Robin and Batgirl got together at one point. And they even had Bruce's girlfriend, whose name escapes me, but it was the character that Lee Merriweather played when she was on the TV series, as opposed to when she was in the film.
Okay, getting back to the TV shows.
So there was Batman the Animated Series, and they followed that up with the new Batman Adventures. And then there was Batman Beyond, which was the Batman in the Dark Future, where Bruce Wayne's a crotchety old man, and Ron Stoppable was the new Batman. Then there was Justice League, and its follow-up, Justice League Unlimited. And then there was that The Batman cartoon, which I never got into.
Yeah, that one, they tried to change things up, and they actually went too far with character designs and things like that.
Between the awful artwork on there and the equally awful writing, I could not stomach that show.
It is by far the worst of the Batman animated shows, in my opinion.
At least as bad as Legends of the Superheroes.
Why? Did it make you physically ill?
No, I turned it off in time.
Okay. And then there was Batman the Brave and the Bold, which I couldn't catch regularly, but I've loved almost every episode of that I've seen.
I remember watching the final episode of that and realizing in the last 30 seconds or so that, oh my god, this is actually the series finale. And just being shocked because I hadn't heard anything about the show ending or anything like that, but they actually wrapped up the show in the finale, which is almost never heard of in cartoons.
Best Ted McGinley guest appearance ever.
Yeah. It's too bad that, I don't know if it was Cartoon Network or DC or both who didn't like it. I think DC didn't like it because it was too faithful to the comics. More specifically, too faithful to the old comics.
And like I said, the writing on The Batman being bad, the writing on Brave and the Bold was great. These were people who had actually read the comics. These were people who loved the series. And you could genuinely feel that across the TV screen.
Yes.
And respected it.
Yes.
And it's so funny, because it was a comedy. I mean, it was definitely camp. But it wasn't camp in a way that was making fun of the characters. It wasn't, haha, Batman's stupid.
No, it very much had the same camp feel that the 1960s Batman had.
At least in the beginning.
But, yeah, I remember the intro bumper where they had Batman and Green Arrow stopping a prison breakout, and all of the villains that were being shown were old 1960s Batman villains, like Egghead and King Tut.
Mm. And Shame!
Yes, he was there. Although, officially, that was the Pharaoh, not King Tut, because of legal issues. Actually, I remember the Wonder Woman bumper, the one where it was Batman and Wonder Woman at the beginning.
Yeah, I fondly remember Wonder Woman's bumpers, too.
Well, yes, but the fact that they actually used the Fox Singer's theme song from the 70s for Wonder Woman on there, it's like, I didn't know they could do that!
So yeah, Batman Brave and the Bold, I would say, at least since we've gotten into our 20s, so in the past 2 decades, that was the most fun Batman show. So, of course, they had to cancel it. But he has not been off the TV. Batman makes a regular appearance on Young Justice as well.
Well, yeah, because isn't Robin one of the leads on Young Justice?
Yes, now both of them are.
Okay, which one isn't?
Jason Todd has not made an appearance as of yet. Yeah, it makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yes.
But for second season, they did a jump forward in time about 5 years, at which point Dick Grayson was Nightwing.
And Tim Drake is Robin now.
Again, this list doesn't include the number of guest appearances on other shows, the toys, the novels, the newspaper strips, the theater performances.
Holy musical Batman! It's this very weird thing that this group called Star Kids out in Michigan did. It's on YouTube. The parts I've seen I've thoroughly enjoyed. I won't say it was great, but I thoroughly enjoyed.
And various games, toys, more toys.
Color forms.
As I said earlier, you name it, it's probably had a bat symbol on it. And yes, much like Spider-Man, BBC4 Radio in 1989 commissioned an original radio drama called Batman the Lazarus Syndrome.
Oh gee, I wonder why they did that in 1989.
Probably to cash in on a little thing called...
They were showing Adam West reruns on it in the BBC at that point.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, but they were doing that because of the movie.
Also, in theaters, well before Burton's take on the character, Batman was also featured in 2 movie serials, one in 1943 and one in 1949.
Starring Lewis Wilson and Douglas Croft as Batman and Robin in the 43 films, and Robert Lowry and Johnny Duncan in 1949.
And you could tell that these movie serials were being made on a budget.
Oh, yes. Actually, the urban legend, I don't know if it's true or not, is that one of the reasons why Batman 66 got made is because Hugh Hefner had copies of the serials and liked showing them at parties at the Playboy Mansions, and people found them hysterical because of the low-budget stuff and so forth, and apparently producers got wind that this was happening and said, okay, let's do Batman, if people find it funny.
I could see that.
While Talbot as Commissioner Gordon in Batman and Robin, that was the 1949 one, was particularly good. Well, it was then freaky when I saw him as Luthor in Superman vs. the Atom Man, which was like the next year.
Back in the day where people were hired on by a studio and basically put in whatever they were doing at the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
All of this leads up to the Batman films. Nolan's take is not the first time Batman has had a successful run on the silver screen.
Tim Burton produced a quadrilogy of films in the 80s and 90s, one of them even successful.
The first one, Batman, in 1989, starred Michael Keaton as Batman, Jack Nicholson as the Joker,
and Kim Basinger as Silver St. Cloud. I mean, Vicki Vale.
And it was a very successful film. Personally, I always thought that Jack Nicholson was a little overblown. He did a perfectly fine job, but he wouldn't have been my first choice of the Joker at the time.
What I like about it is, for a change, he actually wasn't playing Jack Nicholson. He was playing the Joker.
Probably the only time he's played somebody other than Jack Nicholson.
At least in the second half of the film.
Now, Jack Nicholson playing Jack Nicholson has worked for him very, very well over the years.
Major stars get where they get major to be major stars because they play themselves or whatever they've established their film self to be.
Yeah, we've actually had this conversation multiple times where the actual successful character actors aren't usually the A-list actors. They aren't the ones that people pay money because it stars Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You go see a John Wayne film because you want to see John Wayne playing whoever John Wayne's being in this film.
Unless he's playing Genghis Khan.
In which case you're just smart to not go to the film. You're beautiful in your wrath. Anyway, so Jack Nicholson, Joker. I remember everyone was having a conniption fit about Batman being Mr. Mom.
Yes, I remember that too. Those were in the days before people were grousing on the internet and they were just grousing in the comic book stores.
Well, that's because the general public wasn't on the internet yet.
Yes. In 1989, the web was something a spider made.
But yeah, the outrage that they would dare cast Mr. Mom as Batman ran rampant through the comic book community, and then most of them had to just eat their words because he did a phenomenal job.
I was just remembering when my sister came down in the middle of me watching the 89 Batman film on video, and she's like, that doesn't look like Michael Keaton. I'm just thinking, yeah, that's the purpose of the cowl.
But even when he was playing Bruce Wayne, he was believable as Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
And that's where the acting came in. Of course, that's when having a good character actor really helps. Because Michael Keaton had proved himself to be able to submerge himself into a character and convey the actor as opposed to just being Michael Keaton on the screen. Michael Keaton continued on to be Batman in the sequel in 1992 called Batman Returns.
Which, although not as good as Batman, did not suck.
No. In fact, Michelle Pfeiffer did an incredible job of conveying sexiness as Catwoman.
For generations, she was the Catwoman.
Actually, I know people who still feel that way. Christopher Walken as Max Schreck, I thought, did a good job.
Yeah, he did a good job of conveying the crazy, but then again, it's Christopher Walken.
Well, yes, mostly he was playing Christopher Walken, but it worked.
More cowbell! And then casting Danny DeVito as the Penguin.
Should have been brilliant.
It was a brilliant casting move.
It just didn't convey as well onto the screen itself.
Well, that, I think, was more Burton's vision of the Penguin than Danny DeVito's acting.
Yeah. Burton had this idea of the Penguin being this mutated, almost creature-like thing, more than the classic fat guy in a tuxedo with trick umbrellas.
I definitely missed the wah, 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 wah.
Hey, Burgess Meredith was great.
And in spite of the fact that, yes, it should have been brilliant casting, Burgess Meredith still is the ideal Penguin for many, many people. Then we come to 1995 and Batman Forever. Tim Burton turns over the directorial reins to Joel Schumacher. One of the biggest mistakes in the franchise history, as far as I'm concerned.
Jim, I gotta tell you, you are absolutely wrong. It was the biggest mistake in the franchise history.
I was trying to be slightly nice.
No, on a good day, Joel Schumacher is a hack.
I can think of one of his movies that I actually enjoyed, and that was Lost Boys.
Lost Boys essentially works as a cult classic. I would not honestly call it a good movie. I think it's a good cult movie.
Yeah. I said I enjoyed it. The overall badness of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin can be described in two words. Actually, one word if you hyphenate.
Bat nipples.
I liked what Amy said about them.
And that was?
If they're truly bat nipples, there should be six of them.
Batman Forever had so many bad decisions in it. Starting with Joel Schumacher and just working down the line. Val Kilmer did not have the same presence that Michael Keaton did, which, when you think about all the complaints that people had about Michael Keaton, they came true with Val Kilmer.
Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face.
He did a great job of channeling Jack Nicholson.
Yes, it should have been brilliant casting. Tommy Lee Jones is that good of an actor.
Tommy Lee Jones is a great actor. The fact that he wasn't playing Two-Face is not his fault. I will place the blame securely on Joel Schumacher's shoulders again, because I can only picture that he directed him as being, yeah, you're nuts, you know, like the Joker was.
But you have to mention the number two occasionally.
Yes, and flip this coin, even if you ignore it, it's okay. Nobody will notice.
We noticed.
As bad as Two-Face was, the Riddler, well, it was being played by Jim Carrey, and I can actually picture the meeting between Joel Schumacher and Jim Carrey. Hey, Jim, how's it going? It's going fantastic! Great, keep that attitude, only crank it up to 11, because we want all that energy on film.
And wear green.
Neon green. Glow-in-the-dark neon green.
And the riddles were really, as just a Riddler story, it was just a bad Riddler story. I agree with you completely about Jim Carrey not being reined in enough, but it was just a really, really terrible Riddler story.
Oh, yeah. I read somewhere that Frank Gorshin was really irritated / outraged, and I can't blame him. As much as he invested into that character, Frank Gorshin at the age of 70 would have done a better job with that character than Jim Carrey did.
Well, Frank Gorshin, in all fairness, is pretty much the definitive Riddler. Riddler had been in, like, 4 comic book stories prior to 1966.
And then Frank Gorshin came on the scene, and suddenly the Riddler was a very popular bad guy.
All of a sudden, he was bumped up onto the A-list with Joker, Penguin, and Two-Face.
Mm-hmm. And just so that he doesn't feel left out, Chris O'Donnell played Dick Grayson / Robin.
Yeah, I still call him Robin when I see Chris O'Donnell on NCIS Los Angeles.
Interestingly enough, he still hasn't learned to act.
Oh no. D'Artagnan! I'm sorry, when Chris O'Donnell was in the Walt Disney Three Musketeers film, he made Charlie Sheen look like a good actor. Well, for everything that they got wrong in Batman Forever, they decided to up the ante in Batman and Robin.
As much bad things that we say about Chris O'Donnell, he's the only actor who gets carried over to the sequel.
Aren't you using the word actor a little generously?
He got paid for acting. Therefore, by definition, he is an actor.
The next thing you're going to tell me that you thought Arnold was acting in this movie.
Yeah, Arnold should just play Arnold.
I remember when they were talking about casting for that film, and somebody had thrown out the idea of, hey, a great casting idea would be Patrick Stewart as Mr. Freeze.
Make it snow.
And I remember thinking, that would be a great casting choice. Mr. Freeze is brilliant, he's a little bit on the shorter stature side, there is a certain frailty to him.
Otto Preminger made sure Mr. Freeze is usually pictured bald.
All of these things would make Patrick Stewart a perfect choice. So who do they go with?
Arnold. Solely because Arnold has never really shaken his Austrian accent. And because the actors from the Batman 66 all use German accents as Mr. Freeze, obviously Mr. Freeze must have a German accent, right? So let's get an actor with a prominent German accent.
I don't know. I think saying, hey Patrick, can you pull off a German accent would have been better.
Yeah, but there were no lines for Mr. Freeze. Normally, I'm the first person to say, you don't really need a good story to make a movie. I'm being slightly facetious when I say this. Mr. Freeze was only one-liners, like, Freeze, keep it cool. He had no other lines in the movie.
The Iceman cometh.
That's something that he should have just kept between him and his wife.
Well, that was actually kind of the story point, but... And then, of course, there was Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl.
Great to look at.
She needed bat nipples.
And if you haven't seen the viral video, go watch her feed her kid.
So now she's playing Robin.
So you've got Arnold, you've got Alicia, you've got Chris O'Donnell, you've got George Clooney playing a multimillionaire playboy, which playing Bruce I can actually see coming naturally to him. But the cowl can only hide so much. And even George admits to this day that it's the worst thing he's ever done.
I think that he's honestly giving himself too much credit. George Clooney did not kill the Batman franchise. It was Joel Schumacher.
Right.
Yeah, but it's kind of nice of him to take the heat.
And he probably does feel some guilt. I mean, he did say, yes, I'll do this. But then you have Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Uma Thurman being the movie's sole redeeming factor.
And even she wasn't that great. I mean, I'm a huge Uma Thurman fan. and she couldn't do anything to raise the bar on this movie.
I didn't say her acting saved the movie. I just said her being in it is the only good thing I have to say about it.
Ah, you mean her running around in skin-tight, almost like bathing suit-type outfits?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
As long as you don't look above the neck, her makeup was horrid.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, Bane was in it.
The bane of my comic book existence.
Actually, I liked the fourth comic book villain who was in that film. Julian Glover as Jason Woodruff.
Okay. Mobster?
Criminal botanist.
Oh, the science dude. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's actually, you know, he was an old Adam foe in the comics.
Oh. So obviously someone, somewhere along the writing process, actually paid attention to what was going on in the comic books.
Yes. They just skipped that person completely when they came to the Batgirl shit.
I'm guessing that that person did, like, the character outlines, and then they fired him. Said, oh, no, you're way too good for this. We gotta mess this up some.
Uncle Alfred, you've got the official Batman and Robin website on your computer!
So, as we said, they did a fairly thorough job of killing the Batman franchise with that last film. Until Christopher Nolan, a relatively unknown director, was approached to bring a new franchise of Batman back to the silver screen for 2005's Batman Begins. Nolan had made a bit of a name for himself with a few offbeat dramas, Memento being one of them, and being the reason why I had actually heard of him before Batman Begins. Memento was a great story concept, a well-executed film that really just kind of flew under the radar for a lot of people.
I missed it.
Without saying anything about it, go rent it. It is probably one of the best suspense thriller dramas in, I'd even say, in the last 10 years. He brings in Christian Bale to play Batman.
For a decidedly American icon like Batman, he gets an incredible British cast. Gary Oldman, Christian Bale, Michael Caine.
Okay, it's very simple. American actors are known for playing themselves. John Wayne, Arnold Schwarzenegger, we discussed this. British actors actually learn how to act.
And then, of course, you got Katie Holmes to play the romantic lead.
Yes, and except for that one scene at the end, what did she really give that movie?
Not a whole lot. But it was considered the new standard for good Batman films.
I'd say it's a good standard for good films. It's my single favorite rendition of Batman.
Even above and beyond its sequel?
Yes.
Oh, okay. It was followed up in 2008 with The Dark Knight. You may have heard of it.
A little movie with Heath Ledger in it.
You know, didn't do that great in the box office. I mean, there's still three movies with a higher gross than it. In The Dark Knight, we saw Heath Ledger playing the Joker, who, in spite of the changes that they made to the Joker, I really do believe that his interpretation of the Joker is probably the best one that's out there. He really seemed to capture the insanity of the character.
I like Cesar Romero.
I like Cesar Salad.
While he didn't get nearly as much screen time or attention as the Joker did in the film, Two-Face was also featured. And they were two completely different characters.
I still remember your niece's reaction to Two-Face.
What, breaking into an asthma fit because she got so scared by him?
Yeah.
But that brings us to The Dark Knight Rises, the newest release. Storyline-wise, what'd you guys think?
It worked. It was truly a sequel to the first film, in many ways more so than the second one, in my opinion.
Yeah, the first one and the second one had two very different feels to it. This one seemed to try to nestle itself in between the two and work as a bridge.
It was a bookend. The first film tells the beginning of Batman's story. This film tells the end of Batman's story.
And it had several inspirations from the comics themselves. With Bane being in it, you obviously had Nightfall. But there were also traits of No Man's Land, very heavy throughout the story.
I think one of the things that this movie did successfully was, unlike the comic book introduction of Bane and the movie introduction of Bane, this story actually made Bane make sense.
Yes, this was by far the least offensive version of Bane that I have ever seen, and that includes him in the comics.
Actually, I got the feeling that Nolan and company actually understood what they were trying to do in the comics and did kind of missed.
Well, honestly, and I've said this to the guys multiple times, My biggest complaint with the character of Bane is the exact same complaint I have with the character of Doomsday. They created a character specifically to end the hero. And there have been so many other characters through the history of comics that have earned that right. They didn't need to create somebody specifically for it. That being said, I feel that Ken is absolutely correct. The idea of bringing in someone who is supposed to be the antithesis of Batman and who is going through and methodically plotting out how to break the bat, it made sense. It also helps that there is no other superhuman community within the Nolan films. One of the big problems that I had with Nightfall was Batman has all of these other superhero friends, and yet when he finds himself in trouble, his ego won't let him call in help? Really?
Yes, you think that maybe somebody in the Watchtower will go, hey look, Gotham's burning.
This is one of the problems with comic book universes in general, is that if you have heroes who are supposed to be the stars of their series, and then you have established that all of them live in the same world, it makes it hard because there are lots of times when it really would make sense to bring somebody in, but you're trying to tell a story of just this character, and things end up at odds.
I'll leave this as my last comment on it. I've seen stories where they say, hey, the Justice League is off here. They have left behind Batman to do this. Okay, it's a MacGuffin, but at least they've gone through and said, no, there isn't help for Batman because his friends are doing something else.
Right, and they never bothered with that MacGuffin during the Nightfall. They literally said, Batman's ego is getting in the way and he won't call in help because this is his city to take care of. It's his city to take care of. He has been shown to use every tool in his arsenal to protect Gotham City. That would include his friends.
I don't like thinking about Batman having his tool in arsenal.
Ba-dum-bum.
I will say that I liked, in when they did No Man's Land, the fact that they actually had an issue of Justice League where they actually explained, okay, this is what the League is doing with all the other things that are happening around No Man's Land. If you have this community that's cut off from everywhere else, it's going to be the target of all these other villains beyond just what Batman usually handles, and the League was busy taking care of them. But anyway, let's get back to this film.
Did Nolan succeed in finishing his trilogy?
I would say absolutely. It really is, as I described it, it's a bookend. There was a tale that was set up in Batman Begins. Much like Ken said, this is kind of a sequel. The story that began in Batman Begins finishes in The Dark Knight Rises.
And without giving anything away, while Nolan finishes his story, it does have a feeling of the door could be reopened to tell another trilogy or something.
No pun intended, he didn't burn his bridges.
Doing a quick run through, Christian Bale was his usual excellent self as both Bruce Wayne and as Batman. Tom Hardy as Bane.
The first time I noticed Tom Hardy was as Shinzon in Star Trek Insurrection. And I don't know how he went from Star Trek Insurrection, little-known actor, to becoming an A-list guy who's in, like, three movies this year. He was in This Means War with Chris Pine, another Star Trek actor. And now he's, like, Bane. He was fine. I would say the most disappointing thing about his performance was it wasn't Heath Ledger.
And his channeling of Bill Hartnell got a little annoying after a while.
Yeah. He spends about 90% of the time on the screen either punching Batman or holding on to his lapels.
Yeah, and the lapel thing is the Bill Hartnell thing. Just in case anyone thought Bill Hartnell went around punching Batman.
I'll be honest, the lapel holding really got annoying after a while. This big bruiser is walking around holding on to his lapels. Really, you have nothing better to do with your hands?
It's easier than punching everyone.
Like I said, it got annoying after a while.
Well, speaking of doing things with your hand, Anne Hathaway is Catwoman.
It's Anne Hathaway in a skin-tight, leotard-type outfit. The only thing better than that is Scarlett Johansson in a skin-tight, leotard outfit thing.
I've heard from several sources now, people saying that Anne Hathaway should get her own side movie, I don't know if you'd call it a sequel, as Catwoman, and I have to completely agree with them. Now, whether it's because she so embodied the role of Catwoman that she was just unbelievable, or whether it's because she was wearing that skin-tight cat suit, I really couldn't say.
Well, they've tried the whole, we're going to do a Catwoman movie just so we can put an attractive actress in a skin-tight outfit, and it didn't work well.
Yes, but it's because you need things like a script.
Not according to Doug. Michael Caine as Alfred. The only bad thing that I will say about his performance is that there wasn't enough of it.
Just because of the way the story happened, he's missing from half the movie.
But it's Michael Caine as Alfred. It's been great. It continues to be great. Same thing goes for Gary Oldman.
Oh, Oldman is great as Jim Gordon.
Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox. Again, fantastic.
Actually, it's not that good of Lucius Fox, but that's the script's fault. But he's great in the role, and the role works in the film. It's just not any Lucius Fox I knew.
But it's a consistent Lucius Fox through the three films.
Yes. And, well, it's Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman could read the menu off of Wendy's and probably get an award for it.
Well, that's because he's an easy reader.
Yes. The only other superhero I'd ever want to see him with, though, is Spider-Man.
I think we have.
The other two new major additions to the cast were Marion Cotillard as Miranda Tate and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Officer Blake.
I really like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's just, again, having watched his career, I find it hard to believe that he's the same kid from Third Rock from the Sun.
If you look at his face, he still looks like the kid from Third Rock from the Sun. I mean, he is not one of those characters who has physically matured to the point where you're sitting there going, I can't believe it's the same kid. But what he's lacked in physical development, he's more than made up for in talent development. I think he could still throw on a long wig and still look like Tommy. Marion?
One of my favorite cities in Ohio.
Marion? I hardly know him.
Don't know her from Eve, honestly. She did a good job in the role. For what the role was, she did a good job with it.
Yeah, I believe that she took a hold of the role, made it her own, and it was a good role for her to run with. I have no complaint with her in the part. So it's fair to say that we enjoyed it. Ratings?
I wish I could remember what I gave Dark Knight. I gave it 3 or 3.5. I'm going to say 3 pens out of the pocket protector. I really enjoyed it. I didn't necessarily love it.
You didn't Gordon Levitt? I'll be honest, there were parts I was disappointed with in the overall scheme of things. I'm not willing to go into them because it gets too heavy into, well, spoilers. So I can only give it 2 universal antidote pills out of 4 in the utility belt.
In spite of the fact that some of the twists and turns I felt were ruined for me by spoilers, I really enjoyed this film. The fact that I'm able to sit there and go, they finally found a good way to use Bane, gives this movie some extra credit for me. So I'm actually going to go out on the limb and say that I think I enjoyed it the best of the three of us and give it 3.5 pens.
Okay. I will say this about your comment, is that of the two that you mentioned in the theater at the end, keeping in mind that I just avoid the whole media frenzy surrounding films anymore. I just make it a way of life to just not do that. Okay. The one I'd actually heard from you ahead of time, and it's like, okay, and we know what the truth actually is. But the other one that you mentioned that you'd gotten spoiled from spoilers, I hadn't seen the spoiler, but I figured out pretty early in the film anyway.
Ken, I'll see your 2 universal antidote pills and raise you 1 bat shark repellent.
Okay.
Very quickly, future projects. There is a new Batman animated series in the pipeline.
Is that the one with Batgirl and the computer animation?
Yeah, except for it is Batman with the computer animation called Beware the Batman.
Boy, sounds ironic, doesn't it? Well, as always, we thank you for listening to TorpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at torponline.net. We can also be found at Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
Holy social media, Batman!
This has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Batman!